championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel. That's the channel we are a part of. Go ahead and subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, Spotify, wherever you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. It's a little bit of a down period for Texas football, as unfortunately there's no Texas football games to look forward to over the past two Saturdays up until New Year's Day. So we open up our show for y'all with a mailbag questions, and boy, we got quite a few. So we're going to go ahead and do that today, answer y'all's questions, and give you our takes on different things. So, Joe, you ready, man?
Yeah, let's jump into it.
All right, so the first question comes to us from Touchdown Texas on Reddit. He asks, y'all probably already have questions like these planned for your postseason review, but I always like to hear y'all's back and forth on most blank. So we'll start off with most improved player. Joe, who do you think is the most improved player over this past year?
I think it's easily Sam Ehlinger. I think that's one that's really, really out in front and kind of easy to see and right under a lot of people's nose, but I think it's very obvious. I mean, you go from a guy who last year had 11 touchdowns and 7 interceptions last year, and now he's got 25 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. He was the reason Texas lost games last year. There were always a lot of reasons Texas lost games last year because of how much the offense kind of tripped over its own feet. But this year he comes into an offense that's improved along the offensive line, has the same receivers back who had done pretty well. And, you know, he becomes the reason Texas wins games this year. So as far as most improved, I think it easily has to go to Sam Ehlinger.
I would agree, but if I have to choose somebody else, it would probably be Devin Duvernay, man. That dude went from likely transferring to legitimate starter and would have had a lot more touchdowns if he and Sam had been on the same page on a lot of these plays. So I think that dude really stepped up this year, really came into his own, learned how to run routes, used his speed correctly, and became an actual threat. And next year, going into the next year, I expect Sam and him to be on more of the same page, having been throwing together for, 3 years now. He's going to be a threat. I mean, he's going to be a legitimately top wide receiver and really worked his way into the NFL draft scene. So I would say if not Sam, then Devin Duvernay for sure. So the next question we have is most valuable newcomer. So of the guys here, who is the most valuable?
If you want to include redshirt and freshman in this, it's really easy to think that Sam Cosmi has a really good case. I think he does have a good case along with Cameron Dicker and Keontae Ingram, but I think the most valuable newcomer is a guy who helped set a freshman record, and that's Caden Stearns, another freshman All-American. He provides very, very consistent back-end play over the course of most of the season as a true freshman. Lived up a little bit to his 5-star billing. He's got a couple years to be able to do that still, but he came in immediately. He had enrolled early, moved up the depth chart throughout the spring, and became a solid to above average player for most of the year at safety. And that helped a lot. It helped, especially with Brandon Jones still being able to stay in his spot. Helped Caden Stearns cover a lot of different things that having an experienced guy in the backfield with you does, but it also forced some other things. It basically, writing was on the wall for John Bonney. He decided to go to Texas Tech. It moved PJ Locke down to nickel, pretty much full time. His success had a lot of impact this year, and I think his ability was the most positive outcome of all that to come out from him starting this year.
Yeah, I understand that, but the thing is Caden Stearns did have some mess-ups here and there, and he's still learning. One guy who I thought was probably the most valuable newcomer was Calvin Anderson. His ability to shore up the left side of that line was tremendous in the development of Sam Ehlinger. That allowed Sam Ehlinger to become the most improved player, was him actually having time. I don't know if everybody remembers. It seems like everybody has really short-term memory on this, but 2017, Sam and Shane could not sit in the pocket for more than like 2 seconds. They shore up that line with Calvin Anderson in there, and he stays healthy. He's not, you know, he doesn't have the upside that Caden Stearns has, but he was a piece that was so incredibly valuable. Now, Caden Stearns, if you don't have him, you still have B.J. Foster, you have John Bonney back there, who will provide and be serviceable. But in terms of value, I'd say Calvin Anderson, for sure, because of the his ability to shore up that offensive line and give Texas the ability to get all the way to the Big 12 championship. I don't think they do it without him. The next guy is just the most valuable player in general. Who do you think that is?
It's easy for me to go Ehlinger again, but I think it's got to be Lil Jordan Humphrey. That guy's been a big reason of why Ehlinger and the rest of the passing game has been successful. He's been able to get open on his own, and that's not something that Texas has really had from the wide receiver position in a while. And not only is he getting open on his own, he's getting open on his own from two spots and is keeping the offensive's threat credible all over the field. So I think he definitely wins the most valuable player for me.
Let me look this up real fast, but I think I will go with Charles Omenihu, who had, let me go ahead and put this down. He had 9.5 divided by 30, 31% of the sacks this year. So he was basically Texas's pass rush this year. I think that if I'm not going to choose a guy on the offensive side, because I don't want to pick Ehlinger because that's too obvious, but if I'm going to pick a guy who I think if without him, Texas is in a lot of trouble, I would choose Charles Omenihu, because without him, Texas has absolutely no pass rush, and that will destroy them against Oklahoma in the Red River Shootout, would destroy them against, I mean, it would be uglier against West Virginia, it would be uglier against Oklahoma State, definitely don't beat Texas Tech. There's a lot of games that you don't win without Charles Omenihu, his ability to not only stop the run, but be the only guy, aside from Gary Johnson, who can really get to the passer. So you lose that productivity with Garrett, with Charles Omenihu. Let me see how many tackles for losses he had as well. Yeah, led the team in tackles for losses as well with 16. That is 16 divided by 91. You're listening to us do math. That is 17% of your tackles for losses. You lose that, I don't know where Texas is. So I would say Charles Omenihu. So then who are you most excited for next year, Joe, on the current roster? Not guys coming in, but on the current roster.
This one's a little a little difficult because I think there's reason to be excited for Sam Cosmi, likely to take over at left tackle. I think there's reason to be excited for a guy like, you know, Joshua Moore coming back from injury. I think you have to be most or at least personally, I'm excited about Malcolm Roach. He'll be back in a full season, full off season, probably preparing for the position that suits him best, which is defensive line, instead of the coaches kind of messing around and seeing if he could play linebacker at his weight this year, which he proved that even against Maryland pretty quickly proved he could not. I'm excited about him because we know how much physical ability he has in a year of, you know, more technical training, playing defensive line over this spring is going to really improve him next year, and it'll bring a little bit of strength to a position that, you know, wasn't won this year. It'll bring some athletic ability to a position that was kind of lacking it a little bit this year, and it'll probably bring out the best version of Malcolm Roach too. That's something that, you know, moving him back and forth has prevented us from being able to see him. Being able to work at that one position full time will probably bring out the best version of himself.
Yeah, and also not having a broken foot, probably. But I would, you know, Malcolm Roach is a good answer, I would agree. But if you're going to pass up on Samuel Cosmi, I'm going to take him, because that guy has been legitimately good as a redshirt freshman. And one thing that is crucial for your offensive line is to have experience. So with experience in Samuel Cosmi, I can't imagine that he'll take a huge regression. I don't think it'll be like Patrick Vahe. I think there is more to Samuel Cosmi. As long as he gets some weight on him and gets some strength, I think he improves a lot. So give him another full year of strength conditioning and putting weight on, then I think he is good to go for next year. He'll pick up the reins of left tackle. It's nice to actually have a guy who grew up through your program be a good left tackle. The first one for Tom Herman. The next question, sticking on this offensive line trend, Chinese Dog on Twitter asks, do you think the offensive line next year will be better, worse, or remain the same? What do you think?
I think if you look at the people playing on there, you can expect the level to be similar this year as it is next year. You're going to have Zach Shackelford back. It's important to have an experienced center. That's why center has become such a big need in these most recent recruiting cycles. So you're going to have an experienced center back. You're going to have Sam Cosmi likely at one of the tackle spots still. And you're going to have Derek Kerstetter either at a guard or a tackle spot. That's three experienced guys with experience. One a redshirt sophomore. One will be a true junior. And the other a true senior. That's three pretty good levels of experience for an offensive line where you're only likely then going to have to plug in two guys. Now, it'll be two guys that, you know, could have experience, and Denzel Okafor, who redshirted, and Patrick Hudson could be a couple guys who maybe haven't had the time to on the field, like Tope Amade and the rest of the freshmen in this class. But you're bringing at least some players in from the get-go who have played high-level football for Texas. I think that means it'll probably be around the same in pass protection, but I think they could be a little bit more improved in the run game next year, because you heard the coaches talk so often about, you know, we can't really get any push in the run game, and, you know, we need more of that, and consistently not really being able to get it. So I think they'll be near the same in pass protection, but probably a little bit better in opening up holes for the run game next year, even with a couple new faces.
Yeah, that's where I differ a little from you, Joe. I would agree that, hey, I think they're going to have a lot of talent on that offensive line. But as I said, experience is key for your offensive line. And they're losing three guys who have one has been a starter for 4 years. The other one has potential to go to the draft. The other one is been your captain, a senior leader on your team. All three of them have had a lot of experience on this offensive line, and you're losing that. I am interested in seeing how they recover. I'm assuming that what's going to happen is what happens usually when you lose a lot of seniority, but you have talent behind that, which is they're good. They show sparks of being really good, but they're just not super consistent. So I'm assuming that, hey, you know, there are going to be times where Texas has a huge hole to run through. Keontae Ingram just runs through it. He gets like a 30-yard run. And there's going to be other ones where you're like, how do you miss that combo block? Or how do you miss the stunt on there? Or what are you even looking at there? It's going to be some big questions there throughout the year, and that's what I'm expecting out of this offensive line. However, I think you're right. The center being there and being very, very well-seasoned will be very good. Shackelford has definitely helped the team by fixing his snapping issues. And to answer another question, who do we think the expected starters will be from New User Pending and Viper 2325? Both those guys asked similar questions. I think the next year's line looks something like this. Left tackle is Samuel Cosmi, right? Your right tackle is either Denzel Okafor or a new guy coming in, whether that's a transfer or a JUCO or a redshirt freshman somebody. I can't imagine. Maybe Reese Moore might be a guy who's looking to play there. Then your center is obviously Zach Shackelford. Left guard, that's a difficult one. You said Tope Amade. I was thinking maybe you throw Derek Kerstetter over there on that left side to shore that one up. And then the right side is a fight between Tope Amade, Denzel Okafor, Junior Angulau, something along those lines. That would be my imagine. That's what I would imagine that offensive line looks like next year.
Yeah, I don't know if Texas will hit on the JUCO market. I think those options are becoming a little bit fewer and fewer as the days go on, but they'll definitely be involved in the grad transfer market. They've already put their name out there. Part of me still thinks, however, that whoever they get to be a grad transfer won't be a better left tackle than Sam Cosmi. So I'm going to go ahead and let him be that left tackle. Let Shackelford be the center. I think where Kerstetter, it depends on if they hit the transfer market. If they believe that he's good at right tackle and they've got two good guards there to keep him out at right tackle, I think he'll hold that spot down. If not, I think he'll stay at right guard, where he had some success both this year. I had some success this year and some backup play when Shackelford was down. But those three are definitely on the line. I think if you have both guard spots open, I think Denzel Okafor locks down one. I think this redshirt year really helped him out a lot. And I think it's either going to be Tope Amade or maybe even Junior Anguilau at that guard spot next year if Kerstetter stays outside. Now, if Kerstetter moves to guard, that means they probably got a transfer. And then that left guard spot is the only place where there's some real competition between guys like Okafor, Ahmad, Hudson, and then Anguilau, maybe Germai and Christian Jones. But I think you have three for sure. I think you know that Texas is looking for maybe one more to be right tackle if that's what they think is best, to move Kerstetter inside. And then just leave one hole on your line where it's like a question of, okay, do we have experience or a new guy we trust a lot? So I think it's really not a dire situation. You're starting to see the offensive line look like healthier programs, and that you don't have to, you know, the earliest you can trust some people is redshirt freshmen, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, the thing though with the offensive line is there's no guy in that offensive line who was like Samuel Cosmi, who the staff was just like, oh my god, this guy is going to be your next Connor Williams. I've heard good things about Christian Jones, but nothing as exciting as what we heard about Samuel Cosmi before he came on the scene. He's lived up to that hype, but you don't have that right now in your program as another guy who's going to be like, okay, he's an instant NFL dude when he decides to go. So that's something you're missing right now in those redshirt freshmen. That's what you need to build them up to be, and that's what you're working on. We'll see next year. We'll see come springtime. We'll see what happens in the transfer in the JUCO market. We'll see. There's a lot of fluidity still with that offensive line position. And speaking of fluidity, there's going to be a lot on this defense next year. And people have seen that. I guess I've talked about it too in the Iowa State preview. But we've had a question from Waveform Surfer on Reddit and similar questions from Pasta Tapestry and on Twitter, GMCK60 and Josh Kester. We've had questions of a lot of people online are worried about losing 8 starters on defense next year. In your opinion, how do we fill those spots? And is this something that the Longhorn fan base should be worried about? I've given my thoughts on this. I think you should be worried about, but Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you definitely have to be concerned losing 8 starters. This year's defense was average, just this statistically pretty dead average. But that's still, in the Big 12, that's not the worst pedestal to be on, the worst benchmark to be setting yourself at. But I know a lot of Texas fans expect better. You should definitely be worried a little bit about losing both corners. There's a lot of promise there, especially with Anthony Cook, who saw some time. But after that, you saw Kobe Poise struggle in his real main opportunity this year. And then you haven't really seen a lot in coverage from Jalen Green and even another guy who we'll get to this more, but who could play some who plays in coverage, and Deshaun Jameson. He hasn't played that in almost a year. So losing corners, you should have some concern there. No, but know that there's a lot of young, very young promise. Linebacker, that's, you know, the play wasn't fantastic this year, but you're still losing both. The future of the position is interesting, depending on whether Texas wants to play a lot more dime or a lot more nickel. That'll kind of determine whether a B-backer stays on the field or not. You're good there with Joseph Osai, even Byron Vaughn's in the fold, and maybe Jeffrey McCulloch, but it kind of depends on where he wants to go, where he fits best for this defense. If Texas can probably get a grad transfer linebacker, I know those will be in demand everywhere, but they'll be hot on the trails of anybody who comes open that fits well with the program, to kind of determine where Jeffrey McCulloch goes best. Safety, I think That's probably best set up compared to any of the other positions. You will have to replace your nickel, but that could be Jameson. That could be Josh Thompson, who's gotten time there. Depending on the situation, could be B.J. Foster. And if you go dime, I should have mentioned his name back when talking about linebackers, but if you go dime, there may be room for Demarvion Overshown to find a place on the field. And he hasn't, he wasn't able to really get in there except for on special teams this season. So, corners, there's a lot of concern. Defensive line, you're losing three starters, but you have some experience coming back there too. Just again, not very much proven experience. Taquan Graham has flashed, but hasn't really been consistent. Gerald Wilbon's been back up this whole year, for the exception of the game Chris Nelson was out. After behind him, you got DeAndre Christmas and Keandre Coburn, and then replacing Omenihu will be extremely difficult with a guy coming off an injury in a red shirt with Marquez Bimage and Moro Ojomo. So defensive line and corners, those closest to the line of scrimmage as it is, that's where I'm most concerned about.
Yeah, I would agree, man. And, on your B.J. Foster point, I don't know if I want to put him at nickel. I don't trust him that much in coverage to be that good. But I do agree with most of it. I think safety, you're fine there. Brandon Jones, I don't think he's leaving. And you have Caden Stearns back there, B.J. Foster, Demarvion Overshown even. You're good there. Linebacker is a huge issue. As we found out this year, that was one of the reasons Texas had a huge regression from the previous year. The inability to have good linebacker play. And this year, you're losing your two starters. Now, might be a blessing in disguise, but you're losing experience. And I've been on a big consistency is key kick lately in my sports take. So, take it for what it is. I think losing eight guys, you're going to have a lot of consistency lost inside your defense. Now, your cornerbacks, right? We've talked about this. I think your two guys coming up after that are Kobe Boyce and Anthony Cook, like you said. But Kobe Boyce, I've heard his worst enemy is himself. His mind, he doesn't have a short memory, is what I've been told, when it comes to the cornerback position, and that's what you need. You need a very short memory in that position. Anthony Cook, he's great technically, but he doesn't have that ability that Chris Boyd does with his speed. And you're like you said, Jalen Green, we haven't seen him in coverage. We don't know what we have there. Same thing for all the freshmen coming in. I don't think the freshmen are better than that are coming in. So your cornerbacks are a big question. And in the Big 12, not a good thing. Your linebackers are a big question. I think you fill that with JUCO or DeGabriel Floyd, and you also have Jeffrey McCulloch sliding back there into middle linebacker. Joseph Osai takes over that middle line, that B linebacker spot, excuse me. And then your defensive line. Now, I don't have as much of a down view on this defensive line next year because I think they can fix the defensive tackle spot. I think Chris Nelson, he was good, but he didn't really give you much in pass rush, and that was a problem, as Texas found out. So I think having a guy in there like Malcolm Roach or even Taquan Graham or one of the freshmen, that'll help out. It won't be as good as Chris Nelson, but the guys on the side have had a lot of experience. Taquan Graham, Marquez Bimage, like you said, Moro Ojomo, you're getting Jamari Chisholm back. You're getting a lot of guys back. There's going to be some depth. It won't be quite the step down. It will be a step down from what you had this year in terms of talent, but it won't be quite the step down, and you'll have more experience. I think there'll be more consistency in this defensive line play, but it won't be quite as explosive as it had been at times this year. So that's what I think there in terms of who fills those spots. But just in general, Tanner Kell on Twitter asked, can we get a predicted lineup for next year? So I think we just did that for defensive side to kind of go over that. I think your safety, your defensive line is Marquez Bimage, Taquan Graham on the defensive ends. Your middle defensive tackle is probably Malcolm Roach, something like that. Your linebackers, B linebackers, Joseph Osai, middle linebacker, Jeffrey McCulloch, and your rover is something either like, a Caleb Johnson, if they take him or they get him, and or DeGabriel Floyd, whoever just wins out. And then your corners, I'm guessing Kobe Boyce and Anthony Cook will start the season. your safeties. You have Caden Stearns and Brandon Jones back there. That's who I think is predicting. You agree with that, Joe?
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment of who will be there.
And then on the offensive side, we kind of went over the offensive line. It's a little fluid there, but it's pretty simple, I think.
Elsewhere, yeah.
Yeah, Sam Ehlinger's your starter. I don't think that's going to change unless Rashawn Johnson comes in and just sets the world on fire because everybody overlooked how good he was for some reason, or Cameron Rising just absolutely blows up. I don't know. Or Casey Thompson, for that matter. We'll get to that in a second. And then running back, Keontae Ingram, unless the guy they pull in is just another beast. I don't know. Something along like Trey Young, where nobody was looking at him, and then all of a sudden he hits threes from half court. And your wide receivers, Devin Duvernay is your starting Z, with John Burt backing that up. And you have Alvante Woodard and maybe Marcus Washington, because that X wide receiver could be...
X, okay, yeah.
That X wide receiver could be a little crowded with, if Colin Johnson comes back, you have Jordan Whittington there, even possibly, unless he goes a slot. And then you'll have Brandon Eagles as well. Your slot wide receiver, if little Jordan Humphrey comes back, he's obviously your starter there. Josh Moore, Jake Smith, maybe Jordan Whittington. You're pretty stacked at the wide receiver's position, honestly. There's no bad combination here. If you lose Colin Johnson and little Jordan Humphrey to the draft, obviously you're going to take a step down because those two guys are ridiculously good. But I'm pretty happy with how Texas has filled their wide receiver room, even if you miss out on guys like Daylon Wright or Garrett Wilson or Theo Weiss.
Yeah.
Even if you miss it on those guys, I'm pretty happy with what you have right now. It would be awesome to have them, but it's okay because Texas is pretty good in that position. So speaking of the positions, Joe, what do you think is the single biggest position? Oh, Armsh asks, what do you think is the single biggest position, e.g. right tackle, that needs to step up next season in order to win the Big 12? Also, how much would you pay for a new NCAA football game?
$59.99, like they all are.
I go 200. That's the demand, I think. Two times.
I couldn't do that. Biggest position that needs to step up, I think, is defensive line play. Going 3-on-5 is always going to have its downfalls. But the thing is that other teams in the country have just three down linemen. They often have the help of a single linebacker, which is something this defensive line didn't have at all times this year. But you know, there are definitely three-man lines that get credible pressure around the country. Texas needs to be able to do that, running the three down fronts that they do, running the defensive backfield defenses that they do. They need pressure from those three down linemen. So that's where they definitely need to step up, because 2017 proved that if you get pressure and can stop the run with just three guys down, you're going to be able to hold up against everything else because of the athletes that you have on the field. They weren't able to do that as much this year. And I think that's why you saw the Dimes struggle a lot against some of the best offenses in the conference, which are the best offenses in the country. So if you get a little bit better play from the defensive line, both on run downs and pass downs, just with normal penetration, I think that'll improve the rest of the defense.
I would agree with you. And I think specifically the position that needs to be improved on that defensive line or step up is that right defensive tackle. Not right tackle, but defensive tackle. Right tackle, I would agree, needs to step up, but I think the rest of that offensive line will be decent enough to outweigh that. I think a place that you really do need help next year would be the linebacker position. I think those guys need to step up. If Texas wants to take away that run game first and then deal with the passing game later, I think they can get a lot of help from their safety for those cornerbacks, but that middle linebacker and that Rover linebacker are going to be two positions that they really need to step up. Specifically that middle linebacker in the run gap fits. That's going to be a huge need for Texas next year, and whoever steps back there to improve on what Anthony Wheeler had, basically. So that's mine. Also, I would throw in there running back would be a good one to have a step up because you're losing Trey Watson. We'll get to that in another question later on down the road. But the next question we have, just in general for all this, to wrap this part up, Gimme the Puna, apologies, on Reddit. Love the username. asks, what is the ceiling and the floor for next year's squad? What do you think?
I think the floor is probably 8 games.
Really? Okay.
I think with this level of recruiting, this level of we've got the same system and this level of current talent, there's no reason that they and kind of looking at the rest of the conferences, the way that the land, there should definitely be a lot. Eight wins would be disappointing, but I think that's kind of why it's the floor. Oklahoma State.
Are you including the bowl game in this?
No, I think they should 8 wins in the right. 8-4 next year is the floor, is basically what I'm saying. Because you don't have the dual P5 games next year. You have two games before LSU that you should be able to take care of. And you got the rest of the conference replacing a lot of talent, specifically at quarterback. Oklahoma, like I mentioned, Oklahoma State, TCU now, West Virginia, Kansas State and Kansas are getting brand new systems. There's a lot of stuff changing within the landscape of the Big 12, but not so much at Texas. 8 wins should be something easily achievable, and I think that if they just get to 8 wins, that's a disappointing year. So I think it's fair to call that the floor for next year. And then the ceiling is definitely a conference championship, winning the conference. I think if they prove that they could get there in an imperfect year this year, when things start to go its way a little bit more, start to develop a little more, you would think would happen after 3 years in the same system. They should definitely, especially with all the built-in advantages you have at Texas, that should be the recipe to reach the conference title and win it. Now, does that mean playoff? I don't know. That's always a question that we see play out till the very end, like we did this year. But I think it should definitely enough to win the conference without a doubt.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that ceiling. The floor, I think, is a little lower just because you're losing 8 guys on your defense and you're losing 3 starters on your offensive line. That's a lot. That is a lot. And the offensive line was a huge reason Texas stepped up this year, as I said. So I would say 7 games is your ceil- is your floor. 7 games is your floor. That's saying, okay, you lose to LSU, you lose to Oklahoma, you lose to Iowa State or TCU or Oklahoma State. 2 of those teams get you. That's what I'm saying here is, hey, if you can't play defense, if you can't have a consistent defense, if your defense goes down, I don't know how Texas wins some games that they won this year. So we'll see. We'll see. I would agree, though, that the ceiling is definitely a Big 12 championship. Who they will likely be playing again is Oklahoma. They might be losing Kyler Murray. They might be losing Marquise Brown, but they also have CeeDee Lamb. They're going to reload on offensive line. Running back, Rodney Anderson. He's coming back, obviously. Their wide receivers are great.
I think he declared.
Did he?
Sermon may have declared.
They have an incredible running back, Kennedy Brooks. He's still really good. And it doesn't matter if you have the offensive line, they do. So their defense might possibly be improved with a new DC. We'll see. I think Oklahoma is going to be the team to beat next year for Texas, them and LSU. So that's how you get your ceiling, is beating LSU and Oklahoma. That's how you get there. So the next question we have is from AveragePanda051 on Reddit. He asks, I would like to hear some thoughts on the quarterbacks beyond Sam and Shane. I'm curious at how our quarterback landscape is with the current freshmen and the commits and recruits that look to be coming here, and which has the most upside. So I think we also got a similar question from, let me see, who asked about the analysis on those two guys? Johnny Quest W on Reddit as well asked about analysis on Hudson Card and Rashawn Johnson. So what do you think? What's the quarterback landscape look like right now?
It's healthy. The thing is, healthy quarterback room, there's only one football, there's only one quarterback, and that's one of the tougher rooms to manage on a roster. I think next year it's pretty well known that the ball will belong to Sam Ehlinger until he somehow loses it. And I don't, with what we saw this year, even after the Maryland game and going on throughout the year, it's going to be his job again.
It's hard to imagine him losing it.
Right. And the other thing is, every other quarterback who did not see action this year, was able to redshirt. Now, that's a good thing in that, you know, you kind of create some separation between your guys. The thing is that one of those guys was a junior and the other two were freshmen from the same class. So just basic numbers, you know, there's with only one football and four guys out there, somebody's not going to be happy with their position. That's not saying that's the current case right now or that's an imminent thing that's going to happen, but that's just kind of something you know from paying attention to college football over these past few years, especially in this era where quarterbacks try and get playing time as much as they can. With only one football to spread around, somebody's not going to end up happy. It's very likely it could go the other way, but odds are somebody's going to be disgruntled with where they're at. Right. Shane, I think we kind of know what he is. He's a very, very good option as your backup, but this isn't an offense that is best suited for him. When you have a quarterback who can get, you can design runs for, which is what they were able to do with Sam Ehlinger. That's what this offense really takes off. And Shane is probably not the passer that we thought he would be coming out of high school at this point now, which takes away from some of his strengths. As far as the other two quarterbacks with Cameron Rising and Casey Thompson, I believe Casey Thompson was a scout team quarterback very often when they had to deal with, you know, mobile quarterback stuff like that. Cameron Rising, we would often see after practice getting some extra reps with managers. These are two guys who seem like, you know, who we were unfortunate to not see because Texas literally blew out nobody this year. Their best chance to probably play was going to be OU before they made a comeback within 5 minutes. So, I mean, a lot of the backup quarterback game is unknown just because we didn't get to see any of them this year and even in mop-up duty.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the high school quarterbacks, if you want to take over from there.
Well, I can also add a little bit to the two guys, Casey Thompson and Cam Rising. I think you're right. There are a lot of guys in the quarterback room right now, and you're right, one ball. I do think there's reason to keep an eye on that quarterback room. That's been a question that's asked, you know, which quarterbacks do you expect to transfer first, provided we're bringing in another for 2019 and Sam will remain the starter? Asked by Baba Ganoush and Pasta Tapestry. I'm not going to go into who I think it is, but there's definitely a reason to watch that room for multiple guys. So that's the thing. And then the quarterback landscape, Casey Thompson and Cam Rising, both I have heard incredible things about, like very good. There's very good depth behind Sam Ehlinger, and those two guys getting years to develop has been tremendous for them, both of them. I've heard the staff, if the staff were to tell you behind closed doors, they would say Cam Rising is the guy next up. I've also heard from other people that, hey, you know, Casey Thompson looks a little better, more consistent, and he's a better runner. So you have options back there behind Sam Ehlinger next year as well. So that quarterback room, very healthy. And then you're adding in there Rashawn Johnson and Hudson Card. So Rashawn Johnson, my take on him is he's Sam Ehlinger cloned, but he runs a little different. You know, he's a little different running style. He has a very similar arm. He's not as, you know, devil may care with the ball, but I would say, you know, he's your typical quarterback for this type of system. That's what I would expect out of him.
Yeah, I think they're actually pretty close in their development right now. Both are tasked with a lot on their high school offenses, and we know how, you know, a lot about the Lake Travis offense and hear a lot about that. But the Port Neches Groves offense also asks Roshan to do a lot, make a lot of reads, and he does that very successfully. One is his team, and the one has a 5-star wide receiver and some other quality skill players who have been in this system forever on that team. So I think they're both very similar right now. Both are really great athletes with the ball in their hands that have some, that are still reputable passers, but have some time to develop that. And you know, with a that's a good thing about walking into a healthy quarterback room is you can fix what you need to fix without the pressure of, you know, winning a football game. When you've got some other quarterbacks ahead of you in a properly functioning quarterback room.
Yeah, and as you said, they're both sort of in their similar phases, and Rashawn Johnson is like Sam Ehlinger. Same thing for Hudson Card. while he doesn't have as much of a, you know, I'm going to run you over type of running style, he's a lot more, I'm going to make you miss with jukes and spin moves and just my feet than Sam Ehlinger is. And Sam Ehlinger is really good at making people miss, but Hudson Card is faster. He's more quick twitch type of guy. He has a deep arm. He has a very good arm, but having Garrett Wilson and being a quarterback for 1 year in Lake Travis, he has some throws that are like, okay, you know, you wouldn't make that in the next level. So he's a little bit more devil may care like Sam Ehlinger, but he has a different run style. He has a different level of arm. So he's just an athlete who throws the ball, and that's what they want right now. And then they're going to have him in the system, hopefully for quite a while before they really develop him into a quarterback. So that's the plan for Hudson Card. The next question we have is from Rage Cactus. He says, how much will the loss of Omenihu and Nelson hurt the defensive line? Do you expect improvement next year? I think we kind of went over that, didn't we? A little bit.
Yeah, we definitely did. I think losing Omenihu more than Nelson is going to hurt a little bit more. Nelson did provide that experience at nose tackle and a guy who knew how to play the position, but a little bit different than Puna Ford in that he couldn't really get into the backfield and cause a lot of disruption. Omenihu will be a big loss. That's the majority or the plurality of your successful pass rush came from him.
Right.
I don't know if I expect improvement. There needs to be if Texas defense was to succeed, especially when running the dime. But you're replacing a lot. A lot of it is from experience with Graham, with Wilbon, with Roach, with a collection of other guys. But it's still, those are seniors, and a lot, you know, a couple of them started for 3 years over the course of the majority of 3 years. So it'll be tough to replace them, especially Omenihu. But I don't think the drop off as far as in on field stuff is as big as maybe some of the leadership and off field impact.
Yeah, I think more so the loss of Omenihu and Gary Johnson are going to hurt this team. Not so much the loss of Omenihu and Chris Nelson. I think they can replace the production of Chris Nelson. I don't know how well they can replace the production of Omenihu and Gary Johnson, both guys, seniors who played very well in some games, played amazingly well. So we'll see there. I would expect definitely some drop-off out of that. There's no way you can replace a guy like Puna Ford, as they found out. It's very hard to replace a guy like Puna Ford. It's very hard to replace a guy like Omenihu and Gary Johnson, who are the plurality of your defense. I like that word. So I would definitely say, you know, there's not going to be improvement as much as sustaining for the defense next year. That's what you would hope for. The next question we have is from the Great Latsby on Reddit. Does the running game progress or regress next season? Losing Watson seems pretty significant, and it seems like the offensive line may take a step back. And then Maxwell 4727 added onto that, do you think Keontae Ingram will be able to manage the increased workload that could come with becoming the workhorse back for Texas? What do you think, Joe?
Well, I mean, as far as the rushing, what'd you have? You had about 1,900 yards rushing this year, which is pretty darn good. You had, you know, a lot of that was Trey Watson and Keontae Ingram. You had Sam Ehlinger rack up a good amount of yards and have a lot taken away, probably due to sack yardage. So I think the running game will be probably about where it is next year. I think it'll be about the same next year. I think you'll still see some smart running from Sam Ehlinger, some good running from Keontae Ingram. And the thing is, that's preventing me from thinking it's going to take a step up is unless they get a grad transfer back, whoever is going to be taking those second running back carries, I don't know if they'll perform at the same level Ingram and Watson did this year. We know Ehlinger will probably be a little bit smarter in taking hits. We know that that Ingram will probably be a little bit better playing the college game, but that whoever, you know, that third, I guess, is kind of up in the air right now, and it's hard to make me think that they're going to run the ball better next year because I don't know who that third person running the football is going to be.
Right. I think you have to wait until you see, do you get a grad transfer? Do you get a JUCO? Do you get a stellar recruit? And does he take off when he gets to your program? And also, add 207 yards for Sam Ellinger's total because of sack yardage. So that would get him up to 625 rushing yards.
Yeah,
net.
And that's perfect for this offense that wants to run the ball very successfully, but also doesn't want to overload one particular rusher. I mean, Trey Watson was the leading carrier with 167, followed by Ellinger, followed by Ingram. So they among that trio in the backfield, they split yardage and carries decently even. Not anything too. I mean, it's good that the lead running back had more than the quarterback, but they still split carries about, you know, pretty evenly around all those three. So, and that's the way Tom Herman wants it, because that way you can, you know, instead of one person getting, you know, 1,300 yards of carrying and tackling, you've got three people getting about 1,800 yards and splitting that up pretty evenly. So,
right.
It's just, like I said, you got to find that third person to be a part of that triumvirate.
Yeah, and Texas, on pretty similar number of rushing, got 200 more yards rushing the year before, and they're not losing guys, at least Trey Watson, aside from Trey Watson, guys who are huge problems. Like, you're probably losing Kyle Porter. I think he's announced. I think Toneil Carter is definitely going to announce transferring. I think he's already on the list. So you'll probably have Daniel Young and Keontae Ingram there for sure. And as long as you get a guy who is Trey Watson-esque, I think you're good there. I think you're going to have some progression, or at least not a regression in that run game, for having a guy who actually has some skill back there. And you're not like, and unlike 2017, you're not relying on Kyle Porter, Chris Warren, Daniel Young, and Toneil Carter to be your main backs, and then Sam Ellinger getting beat up all over the place. You're going to have some consistency with Keontae Ingram. Now, do you think Keontae Ingram will manage that increased workload if he becomes that workhorse? And right now, I would say no. He needs a full year under his belt of staff weight training, of speed training. Just get muscle on him. Get 10 to 20 pounds of muscle on him, which you can do in a program. And I think he'll be able to take hits over sustained periods. Can he take, what is it, take up Trey Watson's carries, which is 200 more carries? I don't know about that. Maybe another 100 carries will be okay, but he got injured this year off of, what is that, 130 carries? I don't know if you can do that year after year after year and become your workhorse. I would hope Texas gets another guy, or at least gets Keontae Ingram beefed up. The next question we have is from Johnny Quest W. How productive do y'all think Jake Smith will be next year? Now, we kind of went over the entire predicted lineup next year for that inside wide receiver. Jake Smith will be competing against possibly Little Jordan Humphrey and Josh Moore. So if it's Little Jordan Humphrey, I don't think you see Jake Smith very much, aside from, you know, spot roles here and there. Maybe you see him at the running back position a little bit. But I think if Little Jordan Humphrey goes, then you could see him and Josh Moore splitting reps for sure.
I think you'll see Jake Smith probably getting snaps at the same pace Josh Moore was getting before his injury.
Mm-hmm.
I think they realize that his speed and, you know, ability not only to play from the slot but play out of the backfield is going to be useful at some point. I mean, Little Jordan Humphrey is Little Jordan Humphrey, but he does not have this straight line speed and quickness that it looks like Jake Smith has from the high school level. It'll be interesting to see if he can make that jump immediately, but I think there will be some snaps for him. I think he's definitely a more than four game player. I think, like I mentioned earlier, I think the amount of snaps that Josh Moore was getting sounds about right for Jake Smith, and he might honestly get more because he could be used out of the backfield some, and on third down, that's a special little weapon to have. And, you know, this may present Texas the opportunity to go four wide a little bit more. You know, their top three wide receivers are obviously great. They had a little bit of drop off when it went to Jerod Hurd and some of the and John Burt and some of the other guys who are not in that top three at wide receiver, but I don't think that drop-off is going to be as great next year, especially if there's an opportunity to set up situations for Jake Smith, Jordan Whittington even, to get the ball in their hands early.
I was going
to
say Jordan Whittington's the one that's early enrolling, so I think he, if he goes to the slot position, that could be even more competition for Jake Smith to come in and try to focus on or get through, especially with Malcolm Epps likely sticking at that X wide receiver position, because he kind of looked good against Texas Tech in that position. So it will be, okay, you know, how do Colin Johnson, Little Jordan Humphrey take their NFL draft decisions, and who is Jake Smith going up against? And I do think you're right. I think he's a guy you play for more than four, or at least four games. Same thing goes for Jordan Whittington. Again, this wide receiver room is pretty all right, so I'm happy with what they have. That kind of leads you to the next question, though, which is a question on Drew Maringer. And Drew Maringer, to kind of head us into this question, has been getting a lot of hate over missing on guys like Elijah Higgins and Garrett Wilson in state, missing on, let's see, Theo Weiss, missing on Dalen Wright, losing guys in state that he probably should have been able to get. And so that leads us into this question from Beercules, which is, hypothetically, if Drew Maringer leaves and David Beatty replaces him, how much do we gain? What advantages does Beatty have over Maringer? And I understand Maringer is hated because of his lack of top talent recruiting, quote-unquote, and quote-unquote player development, but it seems our receivers have really stepped up this season, and recruiting is pretty solid at wide receiver. Do y'all think the hate is justified? I'll start off with that last one. I don't think the hate is justified anymore. I think last season, when you had those two guys and they were dropping the ball, they couldn't block outside. There's a lot of questions for Drew Maringer, and maybe getting Meekins over there helped out, but I think he answered a lot of it. You know, you still hurts to miss on a guy like Garrett Wilson and potentially miss out on a guy like, or at least lock up a guy like Elijah Higgins. But, you know, I'm pretty happy with what Drew Maringer did this year, in this year alone.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to put it. To answer the question straight up, if Maringer leaves and Beatty replaces him, how much do you gain? You gain a lot more attraction, at least recruiting in the DFW area.
Right.
Somebody on Inside Texas kind of pointed out that I forgot what cycle it was, but there's like a 21-14, you know, advantage for DFW over Houston as far as top talent this cycle or one of the other cycles. You really don't have a guy with like a natural in the Dallas-Fort Worth area right now. Neither Maringer, who played at Mansfield or one of the Mansfield high schools, and Beck, who coached at one of the Mansfield high schools. Those, you know, they really haven't pulled anybody out of the DFW area on offense, maybe save for Rafidi Girmay. Other than that, you really haven't gotten anybody out of the DFW area. And as we've seen with guys like Theo Weiss, Trajan Bridges, you know, a wide collection of guys up there on the offensive side of the ball, it helps to have an early in and a guy who's solid at building relationships in the DFW area, especially if you're a Texas school, let alone if you're Texas. You mentioned Corby Meekins coming in and helping at wide receiver. Not only that, but some the recruiting that Maringer did was solid this year. But you mentioned some of the misses that, you know, maybe not having those DFW connections or connections even to those in his own city that he failed to really cultivate this year. So I think, I don't know if the hate is justified. I think there's obviously room for disappointment. But like you mentioned, Will, this year he did much better than the job he did last year in his first season in Austin.
Yeah, and on that side of things, David Beatty, you know, you're missing out on, you said Theo Weiss, but there's also guys in Dallas who you missed on, like EJ Ndoma Ogar or Branson Bragg on that offensive side of the ball, who could have been really, really nice to have, especially with the loss of Shackelford next, not this coming year, but after that as he's going to graduate. You're missing out on that, so that's not great. But also, Drew Maringer, in terms of recruiting, has really held up his own. He's the reason Texas has any chance at Brew McCoy, who is a five-star top-line athlete, could probably be better on linebacker, but wants to play wide receiver. He's the reason Texas is in that. The reason Marcus Washington is going to Texas is because Drew Maringer and the father really got to know each other well, and the father liked Drew Maringer. Or the family liked Drew Maringer, including Marcus Washington, obviously. There's guys like that. Like Jordan Whittington, he's a big reason Jordan Whittington's going to Texas. There are guys that he has pulled in, including last cycle with Brennan Eagles and Avante Woodard, who Texas fans should be excited about. Really excited that he's able to get them in the door to these places. Now, he'll likely be the bridesmaid to Brew McCoy. Well, that sucks. You know, he's the reason you're even in that position. Anybody else, if he leaves for the JMU position, Brew McCoy probably isn't even looking at Texas anymore. So he does have some advantages here and there. David Beatty probably has a lot more experience than Drew Maringer does, especially having been a head coach. But Drew Maringer, he's a younger dude. He's been pretty good at recruiting. He understands what's going on. I mean, he's got the title of young protege offensive coach, blah, 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 for a reason. Has he hit 30 years yet? Maybe. I don't know.
He's definitely right at it.
He's right there, and he is a wide receiver coach at Texas. He's looking at high wide receiver jobs or head coaching jobs at, you know, big FCS school. I know that sounds funny, but still, I'm nowhere close to that. I'm 25. I can't imagine in 5 years doing that. So he's really good. And that kind of leads us to the next question, which is from M4 Oscar on Twitter. I missed this back in July when we did our last mailbag. It's a really good question, so I wanted to get to it. It's rare to find a coach that is both great technical teacher, that's both a great technical teacher and a great recruiter. Which members of the staff would you classify as one or the other, and which do you think could be both? Also, which do you think is better, technical or recruiting? And Joe, because we had this argument before the show, I'm saying you either get 100% technical and 0% recruiting, or 0% technical and 100% recruiting. And you have to choose one. You have to choose one. So let's start off with, who do we think are the technical and the recruiting guys on the staff? I think Oscar Giles is definitely a technical guy. He has turned guys who are maybe not the best in terms of their star ranking and whatnot and turned them into very good players. I'm looking at Puna Ford. I'm looking at Amenahu. I'm looking at Ojimo and Keandre Coburn, who also, you know, getting Keandre Coburn was a pretty good feat for Oscar Giles in terms of recruiting, but definitely more technical guy in his teachings. Very good at developing talent. What do you think?
Yeah, I, like I said, I think it's hard to go with 100% to 0% for all this. Let's start from the top with Tom Herman. I think he's great developing the quarterback position and running an offense, and so far he's been very good as far as recruiting goes. There's some recruitments that were left unclosed by him last year and maybe even this year, but you don't get the number three class in the country without being a good recruiter.
Tim Beck.
Keep going from there. Tim Beck, I think he's both. I think
he's more of a recruiter than a technical guy.
I don't know. While he may lack play calling acumen, which is very important for an offensive coordinator, he's the quarterback coach, and you know, Sam Ellinger's been a better quarterback this year. I think a lot of that goes to, you know, the coach that spends pretty much the most time with him. And he's also gone out and found guys like Cam. He's gotten two out-of-state quarterbacks to join the same class last year. And then he also successfully got a home state quarterback from within, you know, 30 minutes of campus who has a lot of upside and fits into this office. So I think he's done a good job doing both. Down the line, Stan Drayton.
Recruiter. Definitely recruiter.
I believe so. I think a lot of his rotations definitely last year and possibly even this year have some wondering, you know, those rotations get second-guessed a lot. Why is Kyle Porter in a lot? Why isn't Keonta Ingram as much as he should be? I think that has a lot of people definitely questioning his technical ability. And I think people are questioning his recruiting ability because – So far, he had, you know, kept Texas in a good position with guys like Daniel Young and Tenille Carter, took advantage of the situation. He successfully navigated the recruitment of the top back in state last year. But running back coach is a position that has a lot of big-time recruiters on it. That kind of shows with the way that Texas is attacking the running back position this year, going after a lot of guys who are very nationally relevant to some of the, you know, more successful programs of the past few years, but he's got to show it. But I'd say he's coffee for closers. He's definitely kind of more in the recruiting, thought to be more in the recruiting than the technical aspect of it. Herb Hand, I think, is both kind of in that Tim Peck situation.
Definitely.
Oscar Giles, I think you hit the nail on the head. Corby Meekins, he has a lot of introduction into the Houston area. He's on the staff coach
to be a recruiter.
He was tight ends coach last year, inside wide receivers coach year with an emphasis. Inside wide receivers coach with an emphasis on special teams this year. He can kind of do a lot of different stuff, but definitely he's there to be a recruiter. Maringer, we've gone over. I think this year proved that, you know, he's done a good job of bringing out the best and some really good wide receivers and also adding some more to the fold. Craig Nivar, a little bit of both. I'm probably more known for as a recruiter right now than a technical coach, but not to say that he's not a good technical coach. Todd Orlando, definitely more technical. He's tasked with linebackers, which he's done a good job in this past cycle, but the play on the field has to be a little bit better, and it's not like he's pulling in constant five stars. He's going around the country. He's done a good job of identifying talent, but putting, you know, Malik Jefferson in, giving him his best year, Jason Hall playing a linebacker type position, having him play his best year, Gary Johnson playing well, definitely a little bit more on the technical side. Derek Wareheim, not sure. I mean, he's coaching a new position this year with a returning guy who they needed back, is obviously the class of position, and did a good job of filling up his position on the in the recruiting class with Braden Liebrock and Jared Wiley.
Yeah.
So he's a little bit of both. Probably, if I had to pick one for him, probably more recruiting, but you know, not awful with the technical, at least this year. Jason Washington's both. He's probably an all-star at both. He's probably the best recruiter.
It's funny
on this
that
class.
His title is recruiting coordinator and cornerbacks coach. That is his title.
Mm-hmm.
It's recruiting coordinator / cornerbacks. So, I mean, he was able to pull in Caden Stearns. He was able to pull in Anthony Cook. He's done a wonderful job this year managing, having an incredible year last year and still getting talent for this year. He's good. He's good in recruiting. Might have wanted a little bit more development of Chris Boyd, possibly, but he got Devontae Davis playing the best ball he's played since
his freshman
year. It's hard to ask
for development. It's hard to ask for a little bit more development of a first-team all-conference guy.
True.
When anything, his previous 3 years have been not first-team all-conference. I think more head-pulling out or hair-pulling out all-conference than anything else. Yeah,
it'd be a little worrying if it was head-pulling out. The next question we have is, do you expect Beck to be back next year? I know that's a big question for Longhorn fans. Herman, and the big reason is because, you know, I think we've hinted at the show that Herman is taking more of the play calling duty from Beck, and Herman really doesn't want to do that. And for Herman to get rid of the play calling duty, he would also have to get rid of Tim Beck to get a real play calling offensive coordinator. So do we expect him to suck it up for another year and keep calling plays while retaining Beck, or do we expect him to get rid of Beck and find a play caller and a good offensive coordinator? I'll give my first take on this real fast. I think he'll suck it up for a year. I think he wants consistency within this offense, and he will suck it up and be a play caller for another year while his offense is ingrained within 3 years of players. And then next year, when Tim Beck's contract ends, a 3-year contract, they'll look elsewhere. That's probably what I would assume what happened. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even sure the future.
Oh yeah,
the
question was from Pasty Pasta Tapestry and Double Rods 1995 on Twitter. My apologies.
Yeah, we'll see about. I mean, not renewing him after his third year in his contract's looking very, very far ahead. I think he's definitely back next year. I mean, like you mentioned a lot of things about Herman and his direction of running a program. But at the same time, Beck has shown a lot of very positive recruiting connections that they've taken advantage of. They've made the most important position on offense a lot healthier than anything in the predecessor ever created. Beck's done well as a coach. He just maybe obviously not as a not the best of play callers. So I do expect him back this year. I think Herman has seen that not only can you successfully run a program at the while if you're calling plays, you can also compete for playoffs and national championships. Texas's main rival has done that, and so I think you'll see Beck back this upcoming season because Herman trusts his ability, if he's calling plays, to do it at a championship level while you still maintain and get to hold on to Beck's positive recruiting abilities.
So UTB 040713 asks on Reddit, how can / should Tom Herman tackle the problem of getting outscored 2-1 ratio in the fourth quarter? My answer to that would be he has to adjust the way he approaches that fourth quarter. I know a lot of people are probably going to look at the, you know, can they be conditioned better? I think Texas was very well conditioned. It was usually the other team that was on the ground complaining about muscle injuries in that fourth quarter. Well, Texas was the one standing up and watching. That was one thing I really was impressed with Yancey McKnight. I think he needs to approach the fourth quarter by figuring out a better way to energize his team, make sure that they don't fall apart, energize how he, or take a look at how he manages that fourth quarter in terms of, okay, what plays are we going to call where? How are we going to take advantage of what they're giving us? There are things that, you know, you can nitpick about it. I honestly, in that fourth quarter, a lot of those fourth quarters, I would be like, all right, he played that pretty well. Like, if you're up by 21, are you going to start passing the ball or are you going to try to run the clock out? I would say run the clock out with, you know, 7 minutes left. Well, that was enough for Oklahoma to come back. Texas Tech, it was, you know, they got outscored because they kept on giving the ball back on onside kicks and whatnot. Kansas, there is definitely a problem there. So I think it's more of just an approach to that fourth quarter. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure. I think Texas and Tom Herman just needs to make sure they stay true to what got them into that lead in the first place, what got them into the situation in those fourth quarters where other teams are forced to have to score a bunch of points. I think oftentimes you saw both offensively and defensively, it's like, okay, we're in this spot. Let's just kind of hold here. Let's try and hold here. And then the defense doesn't hold. So the offense has to go and try and hold on, and they go three and out. So the defense, and it's just a, you know, a regressing problem that is caused by lack of aggression. I think you just have to, you know, go with what got you to that point in the game, having a 21 point lead, so on and so forth, and continue to do that. Just stay true to what got you in the position to win. Don't abandon it and go conservative in the fourth quarter, and I think that'll avoid a lot of those problems that you saw this past year in late in the game.
Yeah, but on the other side of that, you get what you happened to them the first season against Texas Tech, where why aren't you running the ball there? Why are you passing the ball? Why are you trying to get too aggressive there? Why are you trying to not do what is probably in the coach's handbook for everybody else? It's something that they really are going to have to balance well in certain positions. So you're right, Joe. They do need to get a little bit more aggressive, but where and how? The next question we have is from Love Slut on Reddit. Do you think Caden Stearns will be the next Earl Thomas, or is that too bold? I think it's a little too bold at this point. And even if we do go that bold, I think Caden Stearns will be the next Caden Stearns. I know that's a cop-out, but was Earl Thomas the next Michael Griffin? Was Kenny Vaccaro the next Earl Thomas? It's going to be, he's going to have his own legacy. He's going to have his own traits that he's better at doing. So I don't know if you really can make that Earl Thomas connection because they're kind of different players.
Yeah, I'm with you there. They both have really good knack for finding the ball in the air. I think, I'm not sure if Earl Thomas played receiver. I know he played on the offensive side of the ball, but my memory doesn't go
two
back.
Two palms of the sky for me, bud. I don't know.
But I know Caden Stearns played receivers, so he had those ball skills coming out of high school. But I agree with you. He'll be the next Caden Stearns, and I think that'll be a really good player and probably be a guy whose skills translate to the next level pretty well.
All right. And then the next question is, how many juniors do you lose to the draft next year from CB983? I think you lose one or two, and those will be your wide receivers if they do decide to leave. Little Jordan Humphrey, the most likely. If I'm going to put percentages on it, that's just a little scary. I'd say there's a 40% chance Little Jordan stays, and there's a 70% chance Colin Johnson stays. So Little Jordan Humphrey, the more likely one to leave. Let's go to the next one from Minnesota Man, Texas Fan, who asks, who will start at what positions in the secondary in the event that Brandon Jones declares for the NFL? Not likely, but it's a nice head exercise, which is pretty easy. You move Caden Stearns to where Brandon Jones was. You move B.J. Foster to where Caden Stearns was. And then you move DeMarvion Overshown to where B.J. Foster was playing. I think that's pretty simple right there. Mm-hmm. Moving on to the next one. Katie Mitchell, 137, asks on Reddit, who do you see Texas ending out the 2019 class with, McCoy, Sanders, or Kane? I think it's a long shot for McCoy. I think he probably goes to USC. Sanders, probably going to Alabama or Georgia. And Kane, that's probably the best bet you have. It's either Texas or Penn State, I hear. So those are...
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think Cliff Kingsbury going to USC probably made McCoy realize, oh, I can achieve my goals as a wide receiver at home instead of far away. So, and Sanders and Kane were always going to be tough pulls, especially fighting some SEC and some other nationally relevant teams who have been recruiting pretty well these past few years. I think it'll be tough for Texas to end up with any of those three.
And another question from Beerkillies on Reddit asks, what's your opinion on DeAndre Glass? His film looks pretty good. I don't get the hate. And I think the answer
is... This
is
all you, because I have not been able to... I saw DeAndre play live against Westlake, I believe, as a freshman, possibly even a sophomore. And he ran really, really well. He's continued to run well, but a lot of people just... The hate comes from being a Katie running back.
Exactly.
And a lot of people think that Katie running backs are given advantages most high school running backs aren't, and inflates how their ability looks.
Right. I mean, thinking about your last few KD running backs, let me just make sure I got these correct here. Your last KD running back was Kyle Porter. You're not getting much there out of Kyle Porter. Rodney Anderson, while he did had a great year last year, this year kind of fell apart. There are a lot of looking at KD running backs. Hey, you know, you might hit gold every once in a while, but there are a lot of people who are like, yeah, KD running backs, they look good in high school. They run a great system there for the running backs. But being a running back at KD, getting a running back from KD is kind of a crapshoot. So the last few questions we have here, we're going to just run through. Does Jamison stick at wide receiver or back to nickel? From Jay Phillips, 88 on Twitter. He's going back to nickel. Definitely going back to nickel. Joe, who wins in a fight, Herman or Riley? Asked by Double Rods 1995 on Twitter.
Pass.
I'm going with definitely Herman. Herman, I feel like has been in a fight or two, so I would say Herman. He also has a lot more muscle than Riley.
I don't know. Riley's from Mule Shoe. I don't know what goes on out there.
It's a hard one. They're both kind of not lanky dudes, but they're not like they're buff, you know, coaches that they're out there, you know, drinking creatine every day. So, let's see. Why do Texas fans hate Boyd, but scouts and other teams often and coaches often seem to love him? The obvious answer here is they love his potential and the physical attributes. It's kind of like, you know, a girl looking at a bad boy boyfriend and saying, I can change you. For scouts, they feel like, hey, I can make him a better, better mentally. However, and it also look really good at the combine, but I wonder what's going to happen at those mental evals for Chris Boyd.
Texas fans hate Chris Boyd because they've heard all these coaches and scouts and writers say about like, oh, this guy could be really good if they put it all together. But he doesn't put it all together as often as teams want, as probably the fans want him to. He draws the toughest assignment each time, or usually one of the first toughest or second toughest assignment that makes him not necessarily an easy target, but a consistent target because, hey, a team's going to throw to its favorite receiver. And receivers in the Big 12 are good. They make a lot of plays over Chris Boyd, but Chris Boyd makes enough plays against them to where opposing coaches saw that he's the best or one of the two best corners in the Big 12. So, yeah, he deserves his criticism and has done a lot of bonehead stuff in his time at Texas. But at the same time, he takes on the toughest task each and every game and does a decent job with it, especially compared to others in the conference.
Yeah. And that was asked by Rage Cactus. Last question we have here from CB983 again. He asks, what are your thoughts on the bowl game matchup with Georgia? Joe, I'll let you go first.
I'm not very confident for Texas. I think they may be able to do some Big 12-y stuff against them. But when it comes to the rock fight that'll be in the trenches, the way Texas likes to play and Georgia for sure likes to play, I definitely see the Dogs having an advantage there.
Yeah, for sure. If Texas can stop their run, then I think Texas has a chance. But I don't think they can stop their run. So I imagine Georgia will beat Texas by two possessions, but I think Texas covers the spread. So it's something like a 9 or 10 point loss to Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, which honestly, you know, that's not a bad thing for Texas at this point in the season. The Georgia is, to be honest, just a better team. They're in a better position than Texas is right now. So I'd be okay with it looking back on the season, which we'll do later on in January. Next week, we will be doing our pregame show for the first National Signing Day, and then after that, get you our thoughts on that National Signing Day and what's happening and going into the next National Signing Day. And then we're on to Georgia. But on that note, y'all, that has been your 4th and 5. I have been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. My man, Joe Cook, where can we find you?
You can find me on Inside Texas or can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89.
You guys can listen to us in our other shows on the Hornscast channel. That's the Hornscast channel right here, what you're listening to on Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, Twitter, Facebook. Wherever you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. Anyways, thank you all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.